And generally speaking, the agenda is to discuss mainly two things. One is to listen to the report from the Secretary General about the activities, processes, and everything that we have been engaged in the last 3 months. And also to discuss the development in the political scene, that in terms of war and humanitarian crisis.
Let me take you back to the issues of the political developments and humanitarian crisis in Sudan. The people of Sudan have reached a breaking point. And the latest report is that people in camps in Darfur, for instance, Zamzam, exposed to daily aerial bombardment and attacks on the ground from the paramilitary rapid support forces. This is happening at a time when you are meeting. What is the Khartoum's vision for ending this serious humanitarian crisis in Sudan?
The number one issue on our agenda, which is what we discussed yesterday, was what to do about protection of civilians and humanitarian crisis. What's happening in Zamzam is heartbreaking, it's shocking, and it feels like defeating the bombardments of the civilian by rebel support forces. But by the same token, also yesterday, the Sudan Air Force bombarded villages, and over 15 civilians were killed. We have proposed before to the international community a plan with three protected areas, three have green zones for civilians to be located, and we even asked for the regional forces to be only responsible for the protection of civilians in those three areas. And as you know, the idea was entertained by the UN Security Council and was voted down because of Russia's veto. So at this point, we talk about the issue, we are concerned about it, we are trying to develop some ideas and plans to see what else could we do, aside from, campaigning and reaching out to UN Security Council. What else can we do?
The people of Sudan, rather, would say, what is your level of engagement with the two belligerent forces?
So we have been in touch with both RSF and SAF, and we demanded, we asked for a meeting. This is last year in December, and we met with RSF. And in that meeting, we reached a DOP, Declaration of Principles, regarding the future of the country, and then also 5 points about the protection of civilians. That's what we did. We took the same initiative we reached out to Sudan Armed Forces, and multiple times we have heard promises about meetings, and the idea was to take the DOP that we had with RSF to them. They could look at it, and then we hoped if they agree to it, then eventually we can move to a joint talks between them or mediate between them, whatever that idea. So we have been in touch with both sides. Unfortunately, at this point, there is nothing I can tell you is meaningful.
Talk to me more about the difficulties you're facing, because you are dealing with two armed groups, and Khartoum are not armed. What are the dynamics of prospective dialogue with people who have guns and those who don't have guns?
We are not a mediator. We made this very clear. We are not supporting any side, but we are not neutral. We are stakeholders. And if you are a stakeholder, then in any case, you are not neutral. So what we do, we speak the voice of Sudanese people. We think we represent a large part of Sudanese community. Many people don't like the war. Many people don't believe the war is a solution. And we speak to that voice. We don't have guns, it's correct, but I think we do have a moral responsibility. And also we do have what we call it a social legitimacy. You have to understand both sides, no matter how they try to justify the war, SAF is trying to call it dignity, and RSF now is claiming to be a liberation movement. I think neither of those narratives are going to they're not going to be believable. Sudanese people really, if you really ask them to the bottom line, I don't think they believe either sides, but at this point, they have to find a way for protection. Some people will look up for SAF because of ethnic and tribal reasons for protection, because they feel they are being targeted by SAF, and vice versa. There are lots of people also in Jazeera and some areas, they feel like they need protection from RSF because in their mind, SAF is supposed to do it. So it is really pure polarization based on who's likely to protect me.
What are the buy-ins from Sudan's neighbors, Egypt, Ethiopia, notably South Sudan? As you meet in Kampala, Burhan was in Juba yesterday meeting with President Salva Kiir. What are the buy-ins from these neighboring countries in terms of really seeing an end to this humanitarian crisis?
His Excellency President Mosifini, he's supposed to be the chair of the presidential, what is called the mechanisms of five presidents. We know that President Ruto multiple times, he made his point. He reiterated that he is pro-peace. He's supporting any peace talk in Sudan. The same thing, I think yesterday we also heard from President Salva Kiir. He made it very clear that he wanted to see Sudan return to peace before even they resume oil production. I think that's a very strong message. I think, you know, both sides are sharing the revenues from the transport of oil. So the fact that South Sudan could say, we're not going to pump oil as long as you're fighting, I think that's a very good leverage. And it might actually be one of the reasons why those two sides can go to the negotiation table. So that is there. We also heard from Ethiopia multiple times that they really want to see peace. Of course, Egypt is being accused of supporting SAF. But at least one thing we know, they invited a peace talk in July. And the peace and the convention was actually titled How to Make Peace in Sudan. So I think at this point, even if Egypt is supporting SAF, I think they wanted to see an end to the conflict because they are really suffering in terms of the influx of refugees coming to a country that is actually struggling economically and financially with lots of debt and limited resources and almost scarcity of important goods and services. So I think at this point, we don't see any neighboring country, even Chad. We haven't heard of any neighboring country that is talking about, let's continue fighting. So that is clear from the region. It's clear from the international community. What's happening is we don't have an internal political will to make peace. It's not the external factors who are actually fueling this. Yes, we have to admit, both sides are buying weapons, they're getting support for sure. No one is going to fight forever if they don't have support. But the point is, you can't make peace by external will. We need an internal political will from the two sides to make peace before anything else.